I'm Al Filreis, and this is Poem Talk at the Writer's House, where I have the pleasure of convening three friends in the world of contemporary poetry and poetics to collaborate on a close but not too close reading of a poem. We'll talk, maybe even disagree a bit, and perhaps open up the verse to a few new possibilities, and we hope gain for a poem that interests us some new readers and listeners. And I say listeners because Poem Talk poems are available in recordings made by the poets themselves as part of our Penn Sound Archive, writing.upenn.edu/pennsound. Today, I'm joined here in Philadelphia at the Kelly Writers House in our third floor Garrett studio by Jessica Lowenthal, poet, teacher, talented arts administrator, in fact, director of this very Kelly Writers House and author of As If in Turning, and by Emily Abendroth, a writer and artist residing in Philadelphia, where she co-curates the Moles Not Molar reading series, whose chapbook Toward Edward Forward was published by Horseless Press and whose recent work can be found in Digital Artifact, Encyclopedia, How To, Pocket Myths, Horseless Review, Eco-Poetics, Cut and Paint, and others, and by Mark Nowak, Buffalo, New York native, now director of the Rose O'Neill Literary House in Chesterton, Maryland, whose 2009 book Coal Mountain Elementary I admire very much, and who is a recent recipient of a Guggenheim Foundation Fellowship. Welcome back, all three of you, to the Writer's House and to Poem Talk. Jessica and Emily, good to have you back on Poem Talk.
Thanks,
thank
Al.
You.
And thanks, Mark, for coming all this way to join us, and congratulations on the Guggenheim.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Don't spend it all in one place.
I won't.
I guess in Chesterton, Maryland. Is it Chesterton?
Chestertown, yep.
Chestertown, Maryland. It would be hard to spend all in one place.
I could buy a yacht.
A yacht.
But I won't.
Right. Well, today on Poem Talk, we're going to talk about a poem by Jenna Osman called Dropping Leaflets. It was first performed here at the Writer's House on November 7th, 2001, at an event called Finding the Words, a collaboration between the Writer's House and Rosenbach Museum and Library to honor Marianne Moore's World War II-era writing in response to crisis, her war poems and war writing, and to permit poets a response to the attacks of September 11th, not quite 2 months earlier. So Osman composed Dropping Leaflets for the occasion and then later published the text of the poem in her book Essay in Asterisks. The recording, with part of her introductory comment, runs for about 3 minutes and 45 seconds, much longer than our usual Poem Talk poems. So here now is Jenna Osman reading Dropping Leaflets.
I'm going to read a piece made up of words that I found when I read transcripts of press conferences given by Bush, Ridge, Rumsfeld, and Cheney in the last few days. And what I did was I read the transcripts, printed them out, I tore them up, and then I stood on a chair and I bombed my office floor with them as if they were leaflets, and the leaflets told me what to do. So this piece is called Dropping Leaflets. Are we on the ground now? Allies cells, and I said operations. We cleared 50% of a wonderful friend and enduring opposition. Take the solid, louder. We clearly are louder. We are the postal system. No evidence has been information. Attacking the caves. Are you on the ground, enduring? A wonderful friend ramped it up. You ought to open your mail. Opposition element, the air, the talents work with precision, 84%. The population attacking the caves, the talents work with the caves and tunnels, hiding in caves, wavering in caves, and hiding in mosques. A wonderful friend on the ground. Freedom, I said, the enduring ally cells, interested in the view, in our aid sensitivities, 50% to the front of our effort, adding that 80% are willing to play. Independent opposition forces that are rosy. So make assumptions on the ground. Are we on the ground now? Scraps of information work from opposition can be more than air, the target, the air liaison. Campaign with the bombing and entirely happy. Attacking the leaflets. We keep working, hiding in caves, and cowering in caves. And I could say confidential areas. The mosques and rest efforts are mad. Execution and the targeting of democracy, those risks, culty targeting to minimize the individual, an obligation to the spirit of enterprise, a war of roundup freezing worldwide and proceeding on course. Training facilities proceeding on course, freezing their guided munitions. A population is tons of struggle against evil, a civilized world of innocence in the mud, an enemy that's on the ground, for there is no neutral ever, no neutral homeland. For the first time in history, ordinary, busy security bioterror. To defend enemies with the no-ness of life. Confident in destruction, complete and cause, certain of the rightness of this time, in the right, man the victories, to comment for a freer world history, committee of evil, defeat the forces we will fight, and great coalition wherever they are, an era of overflight, right against terror, basing global terror, the global trade and lives of our world improve, the modern alliance, I like citizens, but rather than the dust settle, it could mean, as acknowledged, the carpet bombs, precision bombs, as long as 23 months. And I said, go to America on alert. Get a softball to school if you work. Take your child. Game this afternoon. Game or a soccer to the president's going to the game. The fight, our new baseball game, to help us in our task. Force will sign terrorists tracking American citizens to protect level warriors, the decibel from these shadows. Open your mail louder.
So when she introduced this, she said that she was going to read a piece made of words I found when I read transcripts. What do you take that word found to be, Mark, when you hear I found? We don't normally, conventionally think of reading something and then finding words.
Right. I mean, I think it goes back to a long documentary tradition in poetry of using testimonies, using newspapers, using source materials as a sort of base to build a poem from.
Mm-hmm. Jessica?
Yeah, so the finding is finding materials, actual things that are words. I love the picture of her standing up and bombing the things, the words.
In her office.
Yes.
Yeah. She doesn't, in her introduction, either the part that we have heard just now or the part that we haven't heard, but you can pick up in the Penn Sound recording, she doesn't spell it out entirely. In fact, the audience sort of enjoys, takes some pleasure about the vagueness of it. She says, I bombed my office floor with presumably crumpled up bits and pieces, cut-ups of newspaper, and then the leaflets told me what to do. That's the funny part. Jessica, what do you imagine the process to have been?
I think this sense of cutting through the text seems to have been an act of taking over the text that was so frustratingly impossible as a truth mechanism. It was just the white noise that she references. And so that cutting it is a way of treating it the way it needed to be treated. And I think the finding the text has something to do with it, that it was finding a way into the text.
She's responding to, Emily, a strategy, that was the word used by a woman, member of Congress in November. Right. It serves as the epigraph to the poem, helped me come up with a strategy to get through this white noise. Said this frustrated House of Representatives person who was listening to the president and the president's men say all these words, and they struck her, this woman, as white noise. And Jenna seems to have an alternative strategy to that, the alternative to getting through. Jenna doesn't think we should get through. What would you say she thinks we should do or can do?
Well, I think she uses the phrase we should, in this case, she's almost deploying white noise to try and like become a way to see it. And again, I think this piece is a bit unique in that sometimes I think she's trying there's more twists and turns in what happened in the work in general. But in this one, I think it's literally like you make the white noise visible, and hopefully by laying bare the mechanism, something else can happen there. But just one tiny other thing is that Cynthia McKinney one also starts by pointing out the erasure and the ignoring of voices of dissent, and they are what is covered up by white noise.
So white noise covers other language.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you can get through to those other voices is by finding a way to get through white noise. Not an unreasonable liberal response to the problem. Mm-hmm. But Jenna Osman doesn't think that is the way to go, because you'll never get through the white noise. Mark, help me here. What do you think of this? What are the politics of the situation?
Well, you know, I look at it as, one political response would be to stand up on a chair, which is sort of an equivalent of a soapbox, and make a political speech, right? Another, I mean, this is a very different approach to language, which is not a direct sort of response, but of taking the language that exists and is coming at us and sort of decimating it, tearing it apart, and then seeing how it can be put back together.
And then doing something that's traditional propagandistic counter rhetoric, which is to bomb, that's her word, bomb her floor with leaflets. What does this suggest about her disposition? I mean, I think of Jenna Osman, maybe wrongly, as McCloveian or Cagean, somewhat more placid about these kinds of counter rhetoric. And here she seems angry. She's fed up with this. I'm seeing a gesture here. She's fed up, and she rips it up. She stands on a chair, and she starts throwing things almost in frustration. Mark, you're nodding. You think that's right?
Yeah, well, I think it's this, sort of post 9/11 moment in which to critique becomes slightly more dangerous because of the larger politics. You know, there had been a movement, in the late 1990s with the WTO protests in Seattle and the coming together of labor and environmental movements and other groups in which, sort of public acts of protest and dissent were gaining a larger and larger stage. If we only take, like one example of the trade union movement, for example, that group became, much more nationalistic after 9/11. I mean, people in union movements now had a big American flag and had Buy American campaigns. And so that space for dissent in a certain way closed down afterwards. And I think that not only this piece, but the process of composing it speaks to that, how do we, there's a line in the poem, to comment for a freer world history. How can we comment? How can we make our voices heard in this moment where the space for dissent is actually shrinking?
And I think there's also like a resistance to a certain kind of narrative response that might have rejected the national reply to 9/11, but still sort of recapitulated its existence as like another line in there, which is like the first time, the first time, the first time, which I think this piece rejects, sort of like re-centralizing an American space in which it's the only September 11th, et cetera. And I think if you're at a moment where one doesn't quite know what an alternate one would be, there's something interesting about saying, like, I let the leaflets tell me what to do, to sort of be procedurally ruled a little bit.
Training facilities proceeding on course, freezing their guided munitions. A population is tons of struggle against evil, a civilized world of innocence in the mud, an enemy that's on the ground, for there is no neutral ever, no neutral homeland. For the first time in history, ordinary, busy security bioterror.
So I have an aesthetic/poetics question. Maybe I'll start off by asking this of Jessica. There is a poetics here, and indeed once the found words get worked out on the page, Jenna, in performing it, and I believe when we hear that this recording is her first performance, certainly in public, of the poem. So let's assume she was reading it for the second, maybe third time aloud, maybe the first time aloud. And when she gets to these haunting repetitions, we keep working, hiding in caves, and cowering in caves. There's a rhythm here that reminds me of, I want to say traditional poetry, but our ears function in the same way as we might be listening to an Edward Arlington Robinson poem. And so we are cued to think traditionally about the beauty of this thing, beauty of white noise. Is this a problem ethically, politically, that we begin to be seduced by the sound of the white noise as reconstructed?
I think this is a question that Jenna herself asks in a course she teaches on the documentary poetics. So that, is there something that a documentary poetry can do that's somehow more truthful than other modes of documentary or other modes of approaching the truth? And I think all of that repetition that is so comfortable and familiar in a poetic context makes the repetition seem so much more strange in the outside, the poetic context. I mean, why is there so much repetition in this language? Is it that it takes poetry to show us the repetition that's so present in the media?
So it takes poetry. I mean, I'm going to go with that for a second. I think a lot of people would disagree, but the poet has a potentially privileged place here to see this for what it is. Would anybody go with that?
Jenna would.
Yeah. Mark, would you?
I don't know if it's a privileged place.
A better place? A particularly fortunate place?
Maybe has more space and time, you know, to be able to, like, critique this, and has a vehicle through which to do it. I mean, I think that hopefully what poetry does is that it expresses something that a lot of people are feeling but maybe don't have the wherewithal to sit down, or the training or whatever, to sort of sit down and write about it. I know that, you know, I was doing these poetry workshops in Ford auto plants, and that people were incredibly interested in writing about the war and writing about the closing of their plants, but this had been like their sort of first opportunity to, you know, sit down with pen and paper and to really do that. No one had suggested to them before that this was potentially something that they could do. So I don't know if it's necessarily privileged as much as we have an opportunity and like here in this room, we have microphones to speak with and to speak through.
I think there's another spot too, just in directly tying that, where she offers that an opposition or an opposite to war would be critical consciousness, a more accurate opposite to war than peace is an opposite to war. And so if you think of the site of critical consciousness as opposed to poetry itself as like a unique genre for it, but rather that space of critical consciousness as it, then I think that is really true. It's also like the other consistently repeated line in that poem is, are we on the ground? Are we on the ground now? Are we on the ground enduring? And that sort of investigation that starts to happen of like what it would be to be on the ground. And like one starts to question what the space of the ground is, like to be at risk or to be vulnerable. And clearly the speakers or the words from which he's drawing from are people who are very much in the air doing the bombarding and not located on the ground.
Are we on the grounds now? Allies cells, and I said operations. We cleared 50% of a wonderful friend and enduring opposition. Take the solid, louder. We clearly are louder. We are the postal system. No evidence has been information. Attacking the caves. Are you on the ground, enduring?
I have what might be a silly question. When I was in the room when I heard this live, and I was, you know, overwhelmed by it. There was a lot of tension in the air, and it was a good program for us to do in the context of Marianne Moore to take it out of some of the obvious topical things. And mm-hmm. It was a very good program, and I was highly charged by this poem and by some of the lines that we've quoted. Now, you know, 9 years later, the politics of this have sorted themselves out for me, and it's the second thing I think of when I hear the poem. The first thing I think of are some of those stunning, surprisingly, accidentally beautiful lines, and how much they've resonated. And Jenna's wonderful reading voice, and I can hear those 8 years later. But I'm hearing it as a poetic line. Am I forgetting something really crucial? Have I gone soft on my outrage about Bush telling us to go play baseball go to the malls and buy things?
I would say no, but I also think that there is, even in the lines themselves, a register of skepticism towards, like, also, like, if you think of the way Louder plays into there and the emphasis on that, that there's this a very much a present critique of the idea that decibel is not leading to legibility. Like, and so thinking about, and even that it ends on, like, open your mail louder, these sort of, like, obfuscating. It's very aware of the way in which obfuscation happens simultaneously. So it's not like that clarion poetic line that one could just say.
Right.
Well, I think, and that repetition in sort of documentary poetry that deals with kind of military intervention, there's a long history that also has these beautiful lyrical passages. Like, I think of Ernesto Cardenal's Cosmic Canticle, you know, and that each one sort of comes back to the beginning of the Book of Genesis and takes off from there to talk about often horrific military violence and horrific political situations. But there is that thing, that way in which poetry sort of tunes the ear through repetition that brings us back to this sort of initial moment, this initial blossoming onto the earth, from a sort of Catholic perspective of Cardenal's, or a Marxist Catholic perspective of Cardenal's, and then opens into the sort of politics of the time. And so even though the politics of the time kind of resonates and maybe fades a little, those poetic lines tied to them keep up this beauty that I think maybe that you're hearing in the repetition here.
I want to ask you a question that might be a little unfair, Mark, but I can't wait to hear the answer. Your practice entails what can and should be called documentary poetics. How would you define that?
You know, I always...
Either in relation to this poem or just from your own work.
Yeah, I think that, for me, it's always this wide range that sort of moves from a kind of first-person, auto-ethnographic kind of poem in which one is documenting their own experience out to something that's much more objective and maybe closer to certain things in documentary film. Frederick Wiseman, something like that. There's actually a show at the Slot Foundation right now about a New Zealand artist who just made these incredibly long film takes in schools in New Zealand and the UK. So I think there's this sort of long and wide continuum between that kind of personal intervention and exploration to something that really attempts to kind of step outside and see what's happening from a more objective perspective, which is where I would tie this in. I think the process tells us something very personal. I think even that pulled away documentary objectivism tells us something personal, but this one sort of falls somewhere within the middle of that continuum.
Well, we could talk about this Jenna Osmond poem and the issue of documentary poetics a long time, but I'd like to invite each of you to say one more thing that we might not have had a chance to say about the poem or the topic. Mark, do you want to start?
I think that the poem is really unique in the way that, as we've discussed today, it really touches on, you know, how it could be but isn't quite a documentary poem, how it could be but isn't quite a conceptual piece, how it is political but it isn't political. And I think that's one of the beauties of the poem, is that it sort of balances itself between kind of multiple positions within writing today.
Thank you. Jessica?
I find it so interesting that this was an occasional poem. I mean, that it is in the history of occasional poems, which to me are often quite different than this. They speak more directly to and about a specific time that becomes so much more dated than this one will. I don't know how to say that differently.
Interesting. I mean, I would say with the Geisen Burroughs cut-ups, now I read them, I don't give a shit about the stuff that's in the newspaper that they've cut up. I mean, it just doesn't have anything to tell me. I'm probably affirming what you just said. It's sad for me to think that someday George Bush, the younger, telling us to go to baseball games, once really semantically meant something. Stupid, I think. And in the future, will simply be part of some cut-up thing that I don't remember the relevance of.
It's maybe awful that will become illegible, but it may.
But it may. Emily?
I would just say that it's nice to see that poem in two different ways, like both to hear it as a single self-standing sound clip, and then that book Essay in Asterisks does a lot of work. And so I think something pretty different happens when you also encounter it in the middle of a text that is doing all kinds of recombinatory and repetition and etymological and like word play with an attempt to find a politics and a poetics in it. And so I think for me, there's a lot of interest in seeing like what that poem does by itself and then what it does as part of a book collection that is trying a lot of different strategies simultaneously.
And we recommend the book, Essay in Asterisks. Mm-hmm. Well, we like to end Poem Talk with a minute or two of Gathering Paradise, which is a chance for several of us to spread wide our narrow hands to gather a little something really poetically good to commend someone or something going on in the poetry world. Who wants to commend Gather Paradise? Jessica.
I'm going back in time. We started off this conversation beforehand talking about Muriel Rukeyser. And so I want to say go back and read US One and Book of the Dead, a documentary poem.
From the late 30s. US late One, 30s. Anyways, 38 or something.
Yeah,
like
38.
That. Yeah, yeah. Mark?
I think, I mean, to think about 9/11 more historically, I would point to David Harvey's book, A Brief History of Neoliberalism, and the 9/11 overthrow of the Allende government by Pinochet and how he takes that through Thatcher and Reagan right up to the privatization of the war that we hear in this poem today.
Thank you. Say again the title.
A Brief History of Neoliberalism, David Harvey.
Emily?
Somewhat unrelated, but something I've been really enjoying that journal Off Gob lately and the way in which it puts together like both single poetic works and then a lot of essays and loads of translation.
Thank you. Well, that's all the hiding in caves we have time for on Poem Talk today. Poem Talk at the Writer's House is a collaboration of the Center for Programs in Contemporary Writing and the Kelly Writer's House at the University of Pennsylvania and the Poetry Foundation, poetryfoundation.org. Thanks to my guests, Mark Nowak, Jessica Lowenthal, Emily Abendroth, and to Poem Talk's director and engineer, James Lamar, and to our editor, as always, Steve McLaughlin. This is Al Filreis, and I hope you'll join us again soon for another Poem Talk.